Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Purchased for its own sake, like a car or broccoli.
Eliminate the broccoli possibility.
Broccoli is not the means of payment for anything else.
A car or broccoli aren't purchased for their own sake.
Therefore, you can make people buy broccoli.
No. Into a matter that I think has nothing to do with this case, broccoli. Okay?
From the nutritious to absurd, to the absurd, some of the justices talking about broccoli and the health insurance law yesterday. More on the Supreme Court health reform hearings now with New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who has filed an amicus brief in the case. Attorney General, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Ryan. Good to be here.
And really, you know, I noticed the justices kept calling the Solicitor General General all morning yesterday. Is that the actual proper greeting for you as Attorney General? Is it General Schneiderman?
I guess technically it is. I've never thought General Schneiderman sounded particularly appealing, so most people call me Eric or Mr. Schneiderman. But yes, General Solicitor General is a general. Surgeon General is a general, so you can call us general if you like.
But you're a lawyer, not a soldier. Okay. This case was brought by 24 state attorneys general, and don't get me started on the silly way we pluralize attorneys general, but 24 of them. Why were you not among them?
Well, there was also a group of states that filed amicus, several different amicus briefs in this case in support of the position of the administration, and it's fair to say that there was a well-orchestrated effort by the conservatives who are attacking the health care, the Affordable Health Care Act, and who are clearly identifying themselves as enemies of the administration and out to prevent the president from having any victories on any issue, no matter what the harm to the American people. There was a fairly well-orchestrated effort to solicit state attorneys general to oppose this law. I am of the view that this is of tremendous benefit to the states and that this is in keeping with the purpose of the Commerce Clause. This is the reason, in fact, this is a reason to go way back, why Alexander Hamilton and others insisted that the system under the Articles of Confederation, which would have precluded the federal government from helping states out in a massive national market like the health care system, that was rejected. And when we adopted the Constitution, Article 1 provides that the federal government has to take care of interstate commerce. So there are a lot of us who see this as a tremendous benefit to the states. This is a national system that can only be addressed nationally. It's very limited what states can do on their own. The federal government is all over the health care market. Medicare, Medicaid, states are preempted from dealing with a substantial portion of the employer health care plans under the federal ERISA law. So we need the federal government here to solve the problem. And honestly, I think that we are way out at the outer edges of a theoretical challenge to the federal power under the Commerce Clause. And we're certainly way beyond the real world in these arguments that somehow or other you can choose whether or not to be in the marketplace for health care when the federal government has passed a law that requires every emergency room to take you in. I mean, you are born with that right now under federal law. So this is just the federal government's way of trying to manage the marketplace it's already created mandates for and is providing a lot of the funds for. And I have a very hard time, other than in a very theoretical, academic, abstract way, seeing how this argument that this law violates the Commerce Clause could possibly prevail.
And you heard Richard Epstein's argument, if you were on hold a few minutes ago, where he says, yeah, they could have done it if it was a tax, if they could have gotten that through politically, but they can't pick out special victims, in a sense, and say, only you are subject to this mandatory purchase of health insurance under the Constitution. If you don't happen to be covered by your employer, if you don't happen to be covered by Medicare or Medicaid, then you are required, and only you, by the federal government, to go out into the private marketplace, use your own money, and purchase private health insurance. How do you respond to that argument?
I just think it's an absurd argument. Everyone who in the United States is in the national market for health care. You are born into the national market for health care. You have rights that are already provided under pre-existing federal laws. Now, if the challenges to those laws have been upheld, he might have an argument. But I like for him to explain how you as an individual who decides, I don't want to pay for this, even though I know the emergency rooms have to take me in under federal law, that's not something that's just out and out refusing to pay for your share of something that you're getting the entitlement to. It's forcing all the rest of us to pay, and that's why the healthcare market is very different than some of the other markets that have been referred to in attempted analogies.
How about his use of the word cartel? And again, I don't know if you were on the line on hold yet listening to this, but this is something that progressives wouldn't like either, empowering the health insurance cartel. And he used that word cartel. So if there are these health insurance exchanges, and there are only going to be a few companies on each of the exchanges in each of the states, and they all have to offer the exact same minimum product, that is health insurance that covers X, Y, and Z, then they're going to be able to set price. There's not really going to be price competition. And what have we really done? It's not single-payer health. It's not really government health. We have empowered an insurance cartel that can, to some degree, set its price and are forcing this minority of Americans who don't have health insurance otherwise to pay to the insurance cartel.
Well, the question of whether they should have moved to a single-payer plan or stuck with private insurance is really a separate question.
Constitutionally?
That is not really something that has constitutional implications. There's this plan, some progressives argue, is overly complex. It would be better if we had a public option. We'd be better off if, like most industrial democracies, we actually had a single-payer system to cover everyone. That's a political argument that can be made. But there are a variety of ways people get health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. You get it from Medicare, you get it through Medicaid, you can get it from employer-based insurance or private insurance, or you can get it through these health exchanges that have not been set up yet, and there probably will be a lot of variation from state to state. It gives the states the ability to set up pools so smaller employers can take advantage of lower prices. The idea is to make health care affordable for Americans. The only constitutional question is can the federal government, in a national market, which they completely regulate anyway, where they have these requirements that people receive care anyway, provide a rational system for ensuring that we all contribute and that it is paid for?
Yeah.
The thing that everyone seems to be losing sight of here is that if you refuse to pay, you refuse to participate, refuse to pay, you are inflicting huge damage on the rest of us. When you have tens of millions of people lacking health insurance and a federal requirement that's decades old, by the way, and this is not even open to question, that you can't turn people away at emergency rooms, that you were born with that federal provision, and the federal government's now seeking simply to have everyone pay their fair share so that the rest of us don't have to pick up the tab for those who refuse to pay for a market in which they are participating. There's this strange intellectual distinction. Are you in commerce already, in which case the federal government can regulate you everything here, and that's conceded, or are you not in commerce? You are in commerce in the national health care market. You're born, you have a body, it gets sick,
it's regulation of commerce,
not a part of a national
creation
market.
Of commerce. New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, my guest, as we talk about the health reform debate. The attorney generals who are challenging the law argue on behalf of their states that the Medicaid portion is coercion. This is going to be argued today. You said a minute ago that this is good for New York, but they say that states must, under this law, expand the number of people on Medicaid because the law expands at the federal level the eligible income levels and status provisions. Would this not be a burden, a coerced burden on New York State from Washington?
No. Well, first of all, in New York, we have our own state law that is, that brings us pretty close to that level already. And Congress has always been able to define the standards of a federal program and condition states' participation on compliance with those standards. I mean, this happens in lots of programs. So, quite frankly, it was a surprise to most of us who were looking at this case that this issue even came up. We expected an argument on the constitutionality of the individual mandate. I don't think anyone expected this because we have dozens of federal programs that set standards that states have to comply with in order to be eligible for those federal programs. So I think this argument, I don't see this argument really getting anywhere. And I think it really speaks to the fact that the arguments that are being heard, the courts reaching out and granting certiorari on such a broad range of issues that frankly were not really even in dispute below. Like the Anti-Injunction Act issue is not something that the federal government was even arguing, and they decided they wanted to hear on that. This is a very remarkable display of judicial activism, not just in their efforts to intervene and perhaps, you know, some of them expressing an interest in overruling a duly enacted law passed by Congress and signed by the president. But as far as them broadening the scope of the inquiry to include things that I think it's fair to say none of the parties really expected to be at issue. This is the most activist judiciary you can imagine, and I notice we're not hearing many arguments about that from the other side.
Let me get your take, switching directions a little bit, on how it's actually going for your side. I mean, all this doom and gloom about Justice Kennedy's questioning yesterday as the presumed swing vote and tiebreaker in this case, but I want to play two 30-second clips of his questioning and get your reaction. First, here is the one that everyone is quoting and re-airing, the cause of the doom and gloom among Democrats and other supporters of the law. He is questioning General Verrilli, representing the president.
Assume for the moment that this is unprecedented. This is a step beyond what our cases have allowed, the affirmative duty to act to go into commerce. If that is so, do you not have a heavy burden of justification? I understand that we must presume laws are constitutional. But even so, when you are changing the relation of the individual to the government in this, what we can stipulate is, I think, a unique way, do you not have a heavy burden of justification to show authorization under the Constitution?
So, okay, fine. He is very skeptical, says it's a fundamental change in the relationship between individual and federal government. But listen to this clip of Kennedy at the very end of the session, like 11:58 yesterday, when he seems to express sympathy with the idea that the healthcare market is unique and making people buy health insurance won't start us on a slippery slope to tyranny, or worse than tyranny, mandatory broccoli purposes. Again, 30 seconds of Justice Kennedy.
And the government tells us that's because the insurance market is unique, and in the next case it'll say the next market is unique. But I think it is true that if most questions in life are matters of degree, in the insurance and healthcare world, both markets, stipulate two markets, the young person who's uninsured is uniquely, proximately, very close to affecting the rates of insurance and the cost of providing medical care in a way that is not true in other industries. That's my concern in the case.
That's my concern in the case. So, Attorney General Schneiderman, your reaction to Justice Kennedy overall yesterday, and whether you think he's made up his mind against this bill?
Well, I didn't watch the whole argument, but I've given up a long time ago trying to tell whether I was going to win or lose a case based on judges' questionings. That same applies for questioning I get from editorial boards. Sometimes I think they hate me and then they endorse me. But the fact of the matter is this: Justice Kennedy and everyone else, once you step back from the hot political moment of the argument, this is clearly an overt campaign-driven political effort to take down one of the president's signature achievements, expanding health coverage to many millions of Americans. Once you step back from that hot moment, as a matter of constitutional law, as he said, you're in a market where those who refuse to pay their fair share are dumping the tab on the rest of us. They are in the market already. It's just a matter of whether or not they're going to be freeloaders and force the rest of us to take care of them. Again, you are born with the right in the United States under federal law to get treatment if you show up in an emergency room. They concede that we could force people on their way to the emergency room to buy insurance then. So this seems to be an exercise. I understand the political exercise of those who are bringing the cases, but I have to believe that the justices of the Supreme Court are going to cool out once this ends, and they're going to uphold this law. This is squarely within the tradition of the Commerce Clause.
And I also want to get your sense, and as an attorney general, you must have had a lot of sympathy for the position that Solicitor General Donald Verrilli, representing the White House, was in yesterday. And I just want to get your quick take on whether you think he did as badly and whether it matters to the outcome as people are saying. Here is the 30-second clip from the beginning that we've heard before of his rocky start.
Insurance has become the predominant means of paying for health care in this country. Insurance has become the predominant means of paying for health care in this country. For most Americans, for more than 80% of Americans, the insurance system does provide effective access. Excuse me. But for more than 40 million Americans who do not have access to health insurance.
So that was his rocky start. Okay, he had to clear his throat, maybe no big deal. There are headlines out there saying things like Verrilli's bungling on broccoli question imperils Obama law. What'd you think?
I don't buy it for a minute. I mean, this is something that is a matter of, and I think that the justices of the court understand they have a constitutional responsibility in the long term to rule based on the merits and rule based on pre-existing case law, and to have a ruling based on the realities of this marketplace. I don't think to the extent anyone fumbles in court. I've fumbled in court. Every lawyer has fumbled in court. It doesn't mean that the judges are so shallow as to be moved by performance glitches instead of looking at the law. And again, Brian, the key from my point of view is that this is so squarely within the tradition of the Commerce Clause. This is why we created a Commerce Clause. I mean, Alexander Hamilton is rolling over in his grave right now. The point of switching from a system where the states had to regulate interstate commerce to a system in which the federal government is empowered to regulate national markets like the healthcare market, that was one of the major arguments for adopting the Constitution. This is in the Federalist Papers. So we have the case that was cited and discussed, I think, not enough. It's not broccoli, but the Wickard v. Filburn case essentially goes even further than the current case because it says if you want wheat, you have to go into the national market to buy wheat. You can't grow it at home. The reason I say it's more extreme is you could, in fact, in reality, probably take care of your own wheat supply by growing your own.
Yes.
You grow your own health care system.
Right.
You can't grow your own health care. You have to. You are in the national market. If you don't pay, it creates harm towards other people. This is something that should be upheld and squarely within the tradition of the Commerce Clause. I think the justices will be responsible.
And the other side says this is more extreme because nobody is forced to buy wheat, so it was only if you choose to buy wheat that you're regulated in that case. But last question, we have a minute left. Your amicus brief in the case, if I understand correctly, is about one of today's topics that they're hearing this morning, whether the rest of the law can remain in effect if the mandate is found unconstitutional. Yes?
Well, we submitted, actually, we signed under three different briefs, and one of them was on the severability issue. But we also did address the minimum coverage provision that we've just been discussing.
Right. So how about severability? Can it remain in effect? It certainly would be an economic challenge to find other ways to fund the law because it's the funding mechanism that's at issue here. But do you think that the justices, if they strike down the mandate, should uphold the rest of the law?
Well, yeah. There are lots of parts of the law that really should go forward. The job of the court in striking something down is to try and figure out what Commerce would have done had Congress recognized that a particular provision was unconstitutional. But other parts of this law, which is a lot of people lose sight of, clearly go forward on their own. The provision that lets parents pay for their kids' health care up to age 26, the provisions expanding Medicaid coverage, which would cover millions more Americans and ensure that, again, we don't have this problem of the uninsured showing up at emergency rooms. Those provisions can definitely go forward. The only question really is if you're going to have to take out the provisions that say you can't refuse to cover people, you can't deny people coverage based on pre-existing conditions. That is something that is, first of all, very necessary to the efficient operation of the healthcare system. It will save all of us tons of money, get more people into the system, and it's very, very popular politically. So I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure for Congress to do something about that anyway.
Right.
I think that all of the other provisions probably could be sustained. That's the only one that really is in question. Obviously, the United States has tied the two together in their brief. and said, you know, you're not going to get the big benefit that everyone likes so much of saying you can't be denied health coverage because of pre-existing conditions unless we force everyone to pay their fair share. I think that the law stands. Certainly, that's the only provision that I think might be in doubt. There's a lot of other good stuff in here that will be sustained.
We heard earlier from Richard Epstein, the conservative or libertarian law professor from NYU, and now we've just heard from Eric Schneiderman, the New York State Attorney General. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Our coverage of the Supreme Court hearing on the health care law will continue in about an hour. We'll check in on the arguments that are being made today about whether the whole law would have to go if the mandate goes, and about the coercion, allegedly, on the states with respect to Medicaid, and we'll check in on those in about an hour. Don't forget as well, we will again have a live stream available on our It's a Free Country website later today of all the proceedings and special coverage from NPR tonight at 8. So stay with us for lots of Supreme Court health law hearing audio and discussion throughout the day here on WNYC. Up next, a movie that's about to open with a very controversial discussion over its rating, and it's about bullying. Stay with us.